I want to start by saying thank you to Luminescence, to Brian, to Melissa, who not only did an amazing reflection today, but inspired and organized that. So thank you. Now sermon time. Do we have any daydreamers here? You don't have to fess up. Okay, good. You are anyway. Good. I'm one of you too. I'll only speak for myself, but I'll ask the question too. Do you find yourself lost in the thought in the midst of daily activities? Do you realize that on your drive or walk or other journey, you just missed your turn and are now farther along than you meant to go? Because I do. I am one of those. I am also an internal monologuer of epic proportions. I'm constantly talking to myself, usually not out loud. I rehearse important conversations I'm about to have. Does anyone else do that? Yeah, okay. And I'm constantly thinking about something I read or I heard on NPR, practicing a bit of a sermon, usually silently, and also wondering why California drivers are the worst tailgaters on the planet. Or do they just like to tailgate me? I don't know. And in my better moments, I daydream sometimes about the things I love. I do this a lot, in fact. My wife and co-minister, Kristen. My kids, my family. My favorite spots in the world. My favorite sports teams. Favorite memories from the past, like standing on top of the Eiffel Tower at night in Paris. Favorite meals. That goal I scored in my final game of high school soccer. Back to the glory days of athletics. There we go. And I think two of the ways that we all express love and wonder, because that's what daydreaming is about, right? It's about wondering. And so I picked the hymn today, Wondrous Love, because I love it wraps that all up together. It's among my very favorite. I think it's probably one of those hymns that's a little divisive. You either really like it or you're not sure why we ever sing it. It's from a collection called Southern Harmony, which was collected almost 200 years ago in the South, as you can imagine. The version of it in our hymnal is heavily edited and rewritten, maybe for the better, maybe not. I invite you sometime to look up the original lyrics online. They're quite different and beautiful in their own way. It's a haunting hymn, I think I'm safe in saying, partly because of the lyrics, but especially because of the music. I looked this up last night because it's been a long time since I've done music theory, but it's in Dorian mode, at least according to Wikipedia. Brian or somebody can correct me later. Okay, I'm getting a nod from the back there, which is similar to the standard minor key we use, but has a much more ethereal quality. There's some technical reasons for that, but you don't need to know any of that to sort of just listen to it and appreciate it. So I always thought it sort of had this otherworldly quality, which seems appropriate to talk about wondrous love. That sometimes wondrous love looks like this, the love at first sight kind, or the stranger you meet who is instantly a friend, or a bizarre and fortuitous coincidence that saves a life or just makes your day. But I don't think that wondrous love needs to be otherworldly. I was thinking recently of my grandfather, who passed away a number of years ago. And there were a few men more down to earth than he was. He was not an ethereal or otherworldly kind of guy. He had come from a deeply educated family. His father taught economics and law at Yale and other universities. But Ed Hamilton, my grandfather, was more of the get your hands dirty kind. I mean, literally. He was a woodworker first and foremost, but also a self-trained engineer and an inventor. And most of his work was actually in something called pattern making. That is, he made patterns for iron foundries. And so if you're going to make a part, at least in the days before CAD and technology, you have to make a copy of the part. And this is usually done out of wood. And then the wood pattern is put in, and you put sand and stuff around it. You take the wood. So he would, from sketches, from blueprints, make wooden versions of sometimes very complex machine parts. He was very successful at this. He was world-renowned. He has a book, indeed, on pattern making. And as long as I'm talking about my grandfather, let me just tell you my favorite story about him, because it's kind of funny, I think. He worked with a guy named Butch, and Butch was about 6'6", well over 250 pounds, a big guy. And Butch had this ancient, even back then, and this was 25 years ago, VW van, and one of the nuts was stuck on the tire, and they could not get it off no matter what. They tried everything. Butch was a big, strong guy. He tried. They tried a power drill. They tried everything. And finally, they took a Craftsman wrench, put it on there, put a tube over the end of the Craftsman wrench that was about 8 feet long, and Butch stood on the end of this, jumping up and down, trying to get this to move. They did not win. The wrench snapped in two. Now, those of you who are old enough to remember Sears, which is going out of business these days, as far as I can tell, might remember that they make Craftsman tools. And what's the thing about Craftsman tools? They will replace it no matter what, right? You just go and say it broke, and they give you a new one. I think in theory you're supposed to be using it the way the tool is intended, but they don't really test that. And so my grandfather walked in with this wrench snapped in two, handed it to the salesman, and asked for a new one. And they were all just staring at him, like, how on earth did you do it? This is like a solid carbon steel wrench. Anyway, he loved to tell that story, so I tell it to you. Now, I don't think my grandfather ever told me he loved me. That was not the way that he went about the world. I honestly don't remember him talking to us kids much at all, which was not his way. He was the one who was going to show you what he felt. And so I remember particularly this one time. I was in fifth grade. We were doing a project about electricity, and you had to make your own circuit. Maybe some of you have done this. I think it's a common project. And so Mom took me to him, because this was sort of his thing. And the only thing I specifically remember him saying that day, though I'm sure we talked a lot, was, they're having you do this and they're not even teaching about parallel and series circuits. He was really mad about this. Now, if you don't know what that, I got one laugh. There we go, okay. If you don't know, there are two major ways, maybe more than that, but two major ways I know about how to wire a bunch of things, right? One is series, in which you basically run a single wire connecting things all the way around. Series is really easy to do, but parallel instead you run a bunch of wires. So essentially each light or whatever you're running has its own loop. I'm oversimplifying slightly. Series is really easy and relatively cheap to do, but parallel gives you both more power and more redundancy, basically. And if you've ever had a string of Christmas lights and one bulb failed, you know what I'm talking about, because probably the whole thing went out because it was series. Nowadays, they do a lot of the Christmas lights in parallel to avoid this issue, so that if one bulb goes out, just one bulb goes out, not an entire string of lights you've just hung up. Okay. In any case, we did this project together, and I walked into class the next week with my project, which had industrial-grade switches, wiring, it was in a metal casing. It had both series and parallel circuits, which was not required. We didn't even learn about that in school. And all of it was meticulously labeled with his label maker. Everyone else had these really rinky-dinky-looking little cardboard things with, you know, exposed wiring on them and all sorts of things. And my teacher, to her credit, she was a wonderful woman. She praised it. She told my mother that she used to teach about parallel and series, but under the new curriculum, that wasn't part of it anymore. They didn't have time. Anyway, the point is that Grandpa Ed did not mess around. And his grandson was not going to half-ass some school project about circuits. Which is another way of me saying that wondrous love looks a lot of different ways. At the recent UUA General Assembly, which Melissa spoke of last month in Spokane, Washington, one of the UUA co-moderators, Alandria Williams, exhorted us to love on one another in this time. I've known Alandria for more than a decade, since she was the trainer at a youth ministry workshop I attended. Now, I want to break down her words for a second, because if you're not familiar with the term, you might not know what that means, because you can love something or someone, and you probably know what that means, but it's not quite the same as to love on. I think this is a Southernism, I'm not sure, but To love on means to, yes, care for, but more than that, you have to sort of make it known. You can't love on someone without letting them know. Kids, in my experience, really get this. They don't have to be told this. It's us adults who struggle with it. So loving on is when one of my kids sits down with me on the couch and leans in and tells me they love me. It's when my four-year-old tries to tackle me when I get home after being gone all day. It's when a friend notices that they miss me and they send a little note or a Facebook message. And it can also look like when we deeply disagree about something and still stay friendly and engaged with one another and have lunch together. And I think we're going to need a lot of loving on. Because this too I know, there are thousands, tens of thousands of children separated from their parents, sitting in filthy cages on our border, lacking even basic hygiene. And soon they'll be in military bases, the same bases in some cases where Japanese American citizens of the United States were once held in prison camps within the lifetime of some of us here. Those being held today are there because of an immigration system and a government that all of us, whether we like it or not, are complicit in. And also they're there because of racist systems in which we live and participate in every day. We don't have a choice about participating, but we have a choice about making changes. I know that we won't be saved by our love alone, no matter how wondrous it is, but our love can drive us to sympathy and action and justice. Justice is what love looks like in public, Dr. Cornel West has said. So it seems to me that our world and our congregation and ourselves could use a little more wondrous love and a little more loving on, and maybe the skills and tools of woodworkers and electricians and people who can rip down cages. These are not easy times. Climate change threatens the whole planet. Our government threatens, well, all of us, sooner or later, and it just seems hard. Finding the love within and sharing that love with one another isn't going to fix every problem, but it may give us the strength and the wonder and the gumption to get back up and try again. All those things we need to seek the beloved community, even if we have to create it brick by brick, parallel circuit by parallel circuit. What wondrous love is this, O my soul, that drives me to seek this better world? May the power of this love be with us and among us and support us this day and for all the days to come.